So we'll go straight into a meditation. Let's go through the 8 parts of a good posture. First one is Kangba, your feet, your legs. So check in with your legs. Make sure the position is going to be comfortable for a long time. Okay. A lot of people take care of their bottom, but not their ankles. So you might need something under your ankles, okay? Something soft under your ankles. And make sure you can hold that leg position for, half an hour or so. That's number one. Second one is Lakpa, hands. On hot days, I find that Chin Mudra works better. It takes the arms away from your torso and it gives you some air conditioning between the torso and the arms. It makes a difference for me. And then in the winter when it's cold, when I meditate in a cold place, I do the hands in the lap thing, but you can check. I think it's a little easier to get distracted with the arms in Chin Mudra. And it's a little easier to get sleepy with the hands on the lap. Kangba Lakpa Kepa. Kepa means your back. Check your back is straight. Draw your shoulder blades slightly together. Tighten your belly slightly. And that will loosen your lower back. And keep that slight, keep the slight bandha in your tummy as you meditate. Keep it slightly tightened. That's just good general posture when you're working at home on a computer or anything else. Keep your abdomen slightly tightened. Kangba Lakpa Kepa So Chu Che Nam. So Chu Che come all three together. Check your mouth is loose. The corners of the mouth are not tight. The tongue is slightly touching the upper palate behind the teeth, the upper part of the mouth, which will prevent drooling or swallowing. And the teeth themselves are not clenched. And the jaw is not hanging open. It's somewhere between a natural opening of the teeth. So Chu Che. Kangba, Lakpa, Kepa, So Chu Che. Now we go to Go. Go means your head. And the text, remember, and you can check it out. He was saying the head is very slightly tilted down. In the Tibetan it says, Uldu Gang means slightly resting on the Adam's apple, so but not very far down. Go mik, mik means your eyes. If you've always shut your eyes when you meditate, I'd like you to experiment today with slightly cracking them open and gazing on either side of the nose, at the plane of the nose. The tip of the nose. So you're not staring at the tip of the nose cross-eyed, but your eyes are looking down and pensively, thoughtfully, and your eyelids are just wherever they hang when you just let them hang, and you're not closing them consciously. So you might have the eyes slightly cracked open in the way that your mouth is. There's a very big tendency for people to bring their head down when the eyes go down. So keep your chin up fairly well and don't let the head nod down when you lower your eyes. So now we have Kangba, Lakpa, Kepa, So Chu Che, Go, Mik, and then number 7 would be Trakpa. Your shoulders are even. Uh, an imbalance in your thinking is usually reflected by an imbalance in your alignment, and the symmetry of your alignment. Is one shoulder higher than another? Does one leg tend to be, or one hip tend to be lower than the other? And that reflects your personality and your thinking. So try to get your shoulders equal height. You can draw your shoulders up towards your ears. Try up towards your ears, then back, and then down. And then that sets them. Okay. So the last remaining element of the eight-point posture of Vairochana is our breath. Try to breathe through your nose unless you're having some kind of blockage. And we'll go straight to our breath. I'd like you to experiment with the eyes cracked open and gazing down today. Your focus is on the opening of your nostrils. You try to glue your mind there. As Nick said yesterday, it's very helpful to feel the warm, moist breath coming out and the cooler, drier air, external air coming in. And if you focus on that temperature difference and the difference in humidity of the breath, then it tricks your mind into staying on the breath. Now please start counting your breath. First half going out, second half coming in. See if you can count to 10 breaths without thinking of something else. It sounds dumb and you've heard it 1,000 times, but don't get lazy about forcing yourself to start over if you think of something else. And then you'll find that it's a very advanced and difficult practice. Make sure your eyes don't focus on anything. They are unfocused. Then you can slowly open your eyes all the way. And take a good stretch. I think you felt the concentration was better in the room, right? So maybe try it that way for a while, with your eyes cracked open. I wanted to talk about a few things, and then I'll take some questions, if people have questions. One is the question of progress in meditation, okay? I saw a cartoon, I guess it was the New Yorker, I'm not sure, but it was some guy saying to the other guy, you haven't gotten any more calm since you've been meditating these last 5 years or something. And the guy answers, well, think how bad I would have been. You know? So I think that it's very difficult to gauge your progress in meditation. And in spiritual life in general, it's very difficult to gauge your progress, partly because you are inside of yourself all the time. You're with yourself all the time. So it's like seeing yourself age. You can't see yourself age because you see yourself every morning in the mirror. And it's only when you go to a high school reunion that people say, everyone looks terrible and people keep telling you you look the same, you know, which is a sign that you don't. And it's the same with meditation progress. You can't, it's very hard to tell how you're doing or whether you're getting better. There's a feeling, as in so many things, that meditation is going to make you more calm, or like that meditation is going to bring you more peace or something like that. There's a perception among all of us, with all our spiritual work, that we think we're expecting some kind of emotional or psychological change, like that. That's not how this system works, okay? It's not how things happen according to us, you see? It's not that you sit quietly for 20 minutes in the morning and then that quietness leaks into your life or something like that, psychologically or emotionally. That's not what we believe. And what we believe, which I think is so powerful and so attractive, I think this is why thousands of people, we go on tours, right? It's not unusual nowadays for 1,000 people to show up at a talk. Why are people so attracted to this idea? We're not teaching Buddhism on those tours. We're leaving next week for France and Israel and Kiev and Ukraine. And why do so many people come and why are we... We're like booked for... if we took all the invitations we have, we're booked for 5 or 6 years, you know. Why are people so attracted? We're not teaching Buddhism. We don't talk about Buddhism. We just talk about seeds, right? About planting seeds in your own mind. So I have a garden, right? And I work really hard on it. I have roses and all these wildflowers. And I'm only going to grow flowers for my lama. I'm not going to grow vegetables. You know, there's like lesser life form. And then I decided to grow watermelon because they're special. And recently, so I have on the side of the house, there's like concrete and rocks. And I thought, oh, let me see if I can make something there. So it's interesting when you plan a summer garden, right? If you understand the plants, I have a gardening teacher, right? Then you plant in a certain sequence so that over the summer you will have what you want. You see what I mean? I was in Morocco studying Quran in Arabic, and I stayed in a What do you call those places?
Riyadh.
Riyadh. Yeah. And Riyadh is like a hacienda. It's four walls and a courtyard in the middle. And because women shouldn't be seen by strangers, there's no windows on the outside. And then all the windows face the courtyard. And the courtyard is big. It's as big as the house. And the Riyadh I was in, they had planted it before I got there. So I was there for 2 months studying. And they said, "We planted it for you." The driver who drove me from the airport, he said, he kept saying, "Do you want some Moroccan whiskey? We're going to have a Moroccan whiskey party when we get there." And I'm like, "I thought you guys didn't drink alcohol, you know?" And he says, "Wait, you'll see, you know?" And then you get there and they go out into the courtyard and they pick mint and they boil it until it's like syrup. And then they add like half a cup of sugar. And it gets you high. It's like espresso. And that's their Moroccan whiskey, you know? And but they had prepared the garden for me so that it would go off over the summer. I didn't have to do anything. I was there for 2 months, and every few days a new vegetable appeared because they planned it that way. So, you know, tomatoes, corn, cucumbers, stuff like that, chilies. And in meditation, you're doing the same thing, okay? The purpose of meditation, or one of the purposes, is that in the morning, you do your meditation. When you meditate, your mind is working closer to the kunshi nambashepa, the place where the seeds are stored, okay? So in meditation, you are brushing up against the place in your mind where the karmic seeds are stored. So you are making powerful seeds during the meditation. So it's not that you are in a better mood for a while and then the mood carries over into the day. That's not what's really happening. As you meditate, you are planting seeds. Very powerful short-term seeds that will actually ripen that day. Okay, they will ripen in the noon and the afternoon and the evening. The seeds that you plant in meditation are creating your reality for the rest of the day. You see? So it's not, you shouldn't think, don't think in this system, in this school of thought, you're not thinking, "Oh, I'll meditate and I'll be a nicer person for the rest of the day." Not like that. You have to understand that if you do it properly, if you understand what you're doing, you are changing the reality of the rest of the day by meditating. If you have a meeting, for example, I had a meeting yesterday. It was a Diamond Mountain board meeting. You know, those were tense. Those are difficult. We have some very heavy stuff coming down. And the board has really held together and been very strong. But I'm careful to meditate on that morning. You see, I'm really careful. If I'm going to have a heavy meeting or a difficult meeting, I try to make sure I come to Ningbo's meditation class, you know, so I can get my meditation in, because that will change the reality of the meeting, you see. And it was a beautiful meeting. It was very, very beautiful. And the people are very beautiful. But I made them, okay, by my morning meditation, okay? It's not that it puts me in a good mood. Don't think like that. You are changing the reality of the rest of the day. So, you know, Gandhiji, someone told Gandhiji, "What do you do when you have a lot of..." He had, you know, he was overthrowing an entire nation of British control, right? And he was busy. That takes a lot of work. And somebody said, "When you have a big meeting in the afternoon, or if you have meetings all day, is it okay to cut your meditation?" And he says, "I always double it." You know, if I was going to do an hour and I have a big meeting in the afternoon, I do 2 hours of meditation because I want to change the meeting, okay? So think of your meditation like that and you'll be more likely to meditate, okay? It's not a luxury. It's a necessity. If you skip a meditation, you will have a bad day. Or you won't... David and Sharon, right? Jivamukti people? They call it missing the milkman. They say you won't be there when the milkman comes. Meaning, if you skip a day, you'll never know what would have happened if you had meditated. Okay, you might have had an extraordinary day, So don't skip days, okay? It's not that it's going to put you in a good mood or something like that. It's that it's going to change the reality of the day and the week and the life, okay? So that's a reason to meditate. Just meditate and your day will change, your reality will change. Will you notice that it changed? Not really, okay? Because you're in it, okay? And you won't know what would have been if you skip. Okay, you'll just have a worse day, but you won't notice because it'll be your day. You know what I mean? So, do your meditation, especially if you're tired, especially if you're stressed, especially if things are difficult. You have to do your meditation, or things will get worse. Okay, like that. All right, let's do. Any questions? Nah. Yes, please. Loud. Okay, loud. Wait. Buenos días. By the way, I asked my Spanish teacher, one of my Spanish teachers, why do you say buenos días, which is plural, or buenos noches, which is plural? And they say, well, of course you wish the person all good days. You know, anyway.
Lately when I've been meditating, I noticed that my breath will really slow down to the point where it feels like it's almost going to stop.
Yeah.
And then, all of a sudden, I'll have an involuntary breath, an intake of breath. That it's like my body is like forcing, all of a sudden it'll go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good question and it's common, okay, for people who are meditating well. So it's a good sign. So there's a thing in the yoga tradition called Kevala Kumbhaka. Kumbhaka means the pause. It means vase. It means a watered pot. Water pots are important in ancient India and Tibet because there was no plumbing. So you would walk to the well with your kumbhakas and then you would come home. And you would, that was your water for the day. And then you dipped water out of the kumbhaka. So kumbhaka was a big deal. In Tibetan, it's bumba, okay? And that, it's called lung bumba chen in Tibetan, prana held in the pot. And so kumbhaka means the pause between the inhale and the exhale, but more importantly, the pause between the exhale and the inhale, okay? So your breath really has four parts if you think about it. There's an exhale, there's a pause, then there's an inhale and another pause. And those are called kumbhaka. In Hindi now, kumbhak, still called kumbhak. So as your prana starts to, they call shugne timsun, when the prana enters the sushumna and then starts to be still in the sushumna and then starts to dissolve into the sushumna, which are three steps, classic steps, resulting from meditation. Then in the ne part, shukne tim, during the second part, you get a suspension of the external breath, okay, which is a kumbhaka. And that means that the prana is starting to enter the central channel, which is the goal of yoga and the goal of meditation. Chinan tapla torba means the outer method of getting prana into the central channel, the sushumna, is yoga, asana. And then nang means meditation, is the internal means of doing the same thing. So which is better? Which one should you do?
Both.
Yeah, the classic answer is both. Don't try to trick me. You should work from inside and the outside. In fact, it's a vow in Tantra, Chinan Tabla Tsor, but one of the vows of Tantra is work on your meditation from the inside and work on your yoga asana from the outside. And the combination will bring prana into the central channel, which leads to high realizations of reality, which leads to the transformation of the body into light and the overcoming of death. But So when you're doing well, when the process is going well, kevala means singular or simple. The last chapter of the Yoga Sutra is called... What?
Kaivalya?
Yeah, Kaivalya. It's the same word. In Tibetan, it's Bashikpa. So it means just that or only that. And so Kevala Kumbhaka means, rather than holding your breath as a pranayama, as a breathing exercise, rather than trying to restrain your breath, which is the meaning of pranayama, you are just concentrating so deeply that the breath begins to slow down. And then if you get really good at this, one day you will be sitting like in a library and you'll notice that you haven't breathed for 5 minutes, you know? And it's kind of startling. You know, you just notice that you haven't breathed. That's called Kevala Kumbhaka, spontaneous cessation of the breath, okay? Then if you're really advanced, you can keep that up and it's healthy, and then you find out that breath is not what keeps you alive. It's karma, okay? But you can live without breathing and without eating, right? If you haven't got that far, your body notices that you haven't breathed for a while, and the autonomic respiratory triggers, they say, no, we have to take a breath. And then suddenly you go, you know, like you just came up from underwater, and then it startles you. So the only thing you can do is keep going, all right? And then it will become natural, and the body's natural triggers won't trigger, and you won't do that. But until then, it will, and don't get worried about it, okay? When I sleep, that happens to me. I stop breathing in my sleep, and then I wake myself up with a big gasp. So you have to just keep going, and it's a good sign. You should think, oh, I'm special. You know, no, I'm getting close to Kevala Kumbhaka. And typically, within, I don't know, a couple of months of that, you would get deep insights into emptiness. It's a very good sign that the prana is... And when the prana dissolves into the central channel, you have advanced understandings of emptiness. Okay, so it's a great sign. It's a wonderful sign. Then some people try to force it, you know, in the yoga tradition, or they teach you, you know, do Kapalabhati and then, you know, and then try to hold your breath. And I'm a little wary of that practice. I think it can be okay, but I think it has the opposite effect for me personally. It makes me tense. It makes me nervous. I think it can blow out your prana somehow, and you get more anxiety. And if I just sit there and try to hold my... I've had teachers in India who told me, okay, now hold your breath for 21 seconds. Now hold your breath. They had a clock. And it didn't work for me, you know. I don't think you can force that, a kumbhaka. I don't think you can force it. When I was in three-year retreat, I experimented with doing kumbhaka for 2 seconds or 3 seconds. And I think that can be helpful. You can experiment with that. Okay? Okay, let's do some meditation. You ready? Meditation. Please relax your forehead. Relax your eyelids. Learn to go straight to your eyelids and to the corners of your mouth. I'd like you to try your eyes cracked open again. Okay? And the eyes are down but unfocused, but the chin doesn't fall. Please count your breath. Please be careful not to focus your eyes. They're cracked open, but you're not focusing on anything. Invite your own personal teacher to come, whoever it is, and sit with you. They are just beyond visible, right? There's like a curtain, like a clear curtain between you and them. And they're here, but you can't see them. Then it's tradition to namaste, to bow to them. And think of one quality that they have that you would like to have, which is why they're your teacher, right? And praise them in your mind for this quality. Now offer them a gift. The highest gift to offer your teacher is your own successful practice or attempted practice. We could offer, for example, this week of hard work. Now we think of something we've done in the last day that we're not so proud of. I think for myself, most frequently it's mental, some kind of upset at someone or judging other people. So find a little treasure of something not so nice that you've done in the last day, and open your heart and reveal it to your teacher. Now the opposite. Think of something nice you've done in the last 24 hours, something other than the gift you made already. And share it with your teacher. And they can read your mind, right? So just think about it and think that they can read your mind. And offer them, tell them happily about something good you've done in the last 24 hours. And you've done plenty of good things. Now something good that you've seen someone else do. And as Venerable Nyingbo said yesterday, there are many, many examples around us this week of people who have worked so hard to prepare this event, especially the ACI Phoenix Board. They work very, very hard. They don't get paid. They have a lot of headaches to get us this beautiful place and this chance to be together. So take joy in someone else's good deeds. Traditionally, the next step is to ask your teacher to teach you. I like to do it this way, personally. I think of how I would like Michael to be by tonight. Like, it's going to be a long day for me. And how would I like Michael to be acting tonight? How calm would I like him to be? How smiling, patient, untiring by tonight, late tonight, and then ask your teacher to help you be that thing today. Become that thing by tonight. And then the last step before meditating is to ask your teacher to guide you, to stay close to you during your whole life. Unseen oftentimes. And guide us. There are crucial moments in the day when we make decisions or things happen, our mood shifts, and in those crucial moments, may my teacher guide my mind and my heart. Then please come back to your breath. And then slowly release your meditation. Take a stretch. If your nose runs during meditation, I don't know who decided that you couldn't have snot on your shirt, but don't worry about it. Just let it go, okay? It's not going to hurt anybody. You can clean it off later. And even if you have a bad cold, it will just drip. So let it drip. Don't move. Try not to move, okay? And try not to sniffle. While it's coming out, you can breathe through your mouth. Just after it comes out, you got to close your mouth and start breathing through your nose, okay? But there's no rule that you have to wipe your nose, you know? Just let it come. Any questions? Yes, please.
So it's the first time I practiced with my eyes cracked open.
Yeah, good, yeah.
And then with counting the breath, I had a really hard time not seeing a number.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. It's really distracting to sort of see.
Yeah, you're a graphic artist. If it's distracting, close your eyes, you know, lightly. But I encourage you to try it for a while, you know. I'm the same. I like physical writing, and I'm not attracted to... I had a hard time in the monastery debating, because that was all verbal. And I think, yeah, it's just try. I think, what was I going to say? Maybe listen for the sound of the number. You know, maybe someone's whispering into your ear like one and two. Technically, to think of the sound is a distraction. You know, as you get better, you won't need to count it anymore. Because technically, it's a chiki ni she mayinte that we said last night. The mind, when you count, is doing two things. It's watching the breath and it's keeping count. So really, that's a distraction. So as you get more advanced, I think you can drop the numbers. You know, maybe, though, it's the purpose of 10 is that you just don't go on it indefinitely and forget to get up. Did you ever worry about that? I don't know. If your meditation is really good, you're afraid you just stay there for a few days and forget to eat or something. That hasn't happened to me, but I can imagine it. Okay. Any other question? Yeah. Yes, please. Yeah.
My eyes are like crying and watering and that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's just like keeping them open is like a total distraction for me.
Yeah. Okay. Then drop it.
Okay.
Then drop it.
But it's still
but try it. I think, you know, give it a shot. You might want to close them further. But I felt a better concentration in the room. The trick is not to focus on anything. When you're in high school, okay, and you're thinking of the boy you want to take out, or you want him to ask you out, right? And you go like this, right? Right? You stare at the ceiling. I don't know why it is. You know, you're like, when you're daydreaming in class, they're talking about American history and you're thinking about that boy. You know, and you're like, you do that thing. You look unfocusedly up towards the ceiling. And I do that sometimes at the end of the day when I do my Thanksgiving meditation or my coffee meditation. I just go like this and I prop up the pillows and I just think, you know, and I just daydream. Daydreaming is meditation and it's concentration. You had very intense daydreams in high school about boys or girls, I think mostly. And you're like, and your mom comes in and she's like, dinner's ready. And then there's a phenomenon in Tibetan called Nangla Manepa. Say Nangla Manepa. Nangla Manepa. You don't hear her. You're thinking about this boy, and then your mom says, dinner's ready. And then she comes in 5 minutes later and she yells at you and says, dinner's ready, you know. didn't you hear me the first time? Then you say, yeah, I was aware of something. Now that I think about it, I heard a sound, but I didn't engage in the sound. That's called Nangla Mangepa in meditation. It means you're aware of someone standing up and moving around, or you're aware of someone closing a door or the compressor of the air conditioner, but it doesn't register. You see what I mean? If someone asks you, do you remember? You say, I remember. But if they say, what was the sound like? You say, I don't know, I didn't engage in it. You see what I mean? That's called Nangla Mangepa in meditation. And that's a good place to be. So I think learn to open your eyes just as an option. And then see if you can reach Nangla Mangepa, where you don't register movements and distractions. I find the slightly cracked open eyes are very helpful when I haven't had enough sleep and I'm trying to meditate, which is usually a bad idea. Okay, one of the first questions I asked my Lama in 1973 or something, 74, was Ken Rinpoche. I said, tell me how not to sleep. Tell me how I can not have to sleep. And he said, forget it. It doesn't work, you know. You should sleep as much as you need. I asked David Life, you know, give me a suggestion for when I'm sleepy and I'm meditating. He came during my 3-year retreat to teach us, and he said, you should sleep more. You'll find it very hard to meditate if you haven't had a good sleep. Sometimes if you start to meditate and you find that you're too sleepy, you can crack your eyes. If it's a little bit not enough sleep, cracking your eyes is enough. And it will keep you, you'll have a good meditation session that if you closed your eyes, you wouldn't have. Because the body is conditioned for your whole life that when you close your eyes, it's time to sleep. Okay? And you're trying to fight that habit. So if you find yourself really sleepy, crack your eyes and see if it helps. If it doesn't help, stop meditating and get some sleep. Okay? And that's the same for yoga. I think not having enough sleep and then trying to do yoga is very difficult for me. So try. Maybe you could just use it when you haven't had enough sleep, or it's too warm, or you just had a big dinner or something. Okay. Right. One more question. Yeah.
The other day you talked about sitting on the swastika.
Yeah.
And the next morning, Sylvia and I talked about it, and I felt all the sadness coming up.
Yeah.
I'm German, and yeah.
Yeah.
And also feeling the whole time of my life like guilty.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what can I do to heal this or transform it? Because I mean, I think it's a good chance or opportunity to overcome not only for myself but more. So is it tantra meditation or?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you don't feel strong enough, you can do a Dharma wheel, which is a circle, and four lines through it, right? So eight spoke wheel. So you can just do a Buddha wheel, which is a circle, and four lines through it. And that represents the continuity of the teachings from generation to generation. And I think that's a normal alternative if the swastika is too strong. But I like your idea of trying to fight against the old meaning of it, bring back the older meaning of it, you know, and I think that would be a really good exercise to try to see the older meaning of it, which is goodness and prosperity, what do you call it? Stable goodness. So I think Tonglen's good. I think Tonglen would be good. Yeah. Yeah. You can do Tonglen on people who are dead already, because no one dies really. Their minds are still exist somewhere. So you can send them kind thoughts, people who died already. And you can also do Tonglen on future people who haven't come yet. And maybe we could work on that, you know. But I think a big thing in Buddhism is forgiving yourself also, you know, like to have the strength to forgive yourself. No one is perfect, and given the same conditions, any one of us in any country would have done the same things. We are not so perfect, you know. All people on this planet are about the same. It's not like one nation does worse things than another nation. I live on Navajo land. I own the land and my house on the land of people who were killed and moved off that land. And I feel it, you know. And no country is more pure than another country. It's not, and no person is more pure than another person. We're all 99.4% bad. And, you know, maybe somebody gets to 99.3 and then they look like Gandhi, you know. But seriously, you cannot come to this realm unless you are seriously afflicted, you know, your mind. And we're all capable of violence. We just didn't have the chance, you know. I went to India. I was living in Dharamsala. I had to cook my own bread every morning. There's a special way you can cook. The refugees taught me. You can make a cone out of flour. You put it in a cup. You put water in the cup. You cover the cup. And you put 3 sticks of wood and little sticks. And you can bake the bread, you know. But we ran out of wood and then we needed kerosene. And so I asked people, where do I buy kerosene? And they said, the truck comes once a week. There's a delivery truck from New Delhi, you know, it comes once a week. So I said, okay, what time does it come? They said, 10 o'clock on Tuesday, you know. So I go down to the public square at 10 o'clock on Tuesday. There's like 5,000 people there waiting for the truck. And it comes in and there's a mob. It's just a mob. It's a riot. And they start fighting. And I was holding my cup over my head like this because I was afraid I would drop it because it was a riot, you know. And just everyone fighting and struggling to get the kerosene, you know. And then I said, I'm from America. We would never do that, you know. Then I went home and I didn't have kerosene. The third week, I was fighting, you know, and I'm bigger than all those Indians, you know. And, you know, I was like, if the circumstances come, any of us will do the same violence. We'll do the same thing. Or we would hurt another nation or another race of people. We're all capable of that. So don't think it's... I think sometimes we're too hard on ourselves, you know. Do Tonglen, ask for forgiveness, but don't dwell on it, you know. We're all the same, you know. Nobody's much better than anybody else, you know. We are very fragilely not fighting with each other right now, you know. That's good, you know. So, if we were all hungry, it might be different, you know. So, South Sudan, places like that, we're all capable of that. Put us in the same situation, and we'd be the same. So, don't keep it with you, you know. In our tradition, do a couple of good tonglens, maybe for 6 months, and then say that the debt is paid, and move on. You know, so I think, yeah, maybe the day you can sit on a swastika happily is healthy. Yeah. Then maybe you could teach other people the old meaning. And maybe we could change the meaning of it, of the symbol. Yeah.